Sunday morning to today's panel on the rise of the far right. Is this, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Rise of the far right in India. I'm Pranav Jani. I'm from Ohio. I've been to these conferences for a long time, and it's great that we're focusing on this topic, because the rise of Modi in India is something that all socialists and Marxists and anyone who wants to fight fascism needs to be really aware of, right? And sometimes, for some reason that I still can't figure out, India and South Asia fall out of the picture of the US left. I remember a few months ago, after making a big stink about it, when people started talking about Modi in my circles, they started saying Modi is also an example of Trump. Now, in the current moment, we can link those together, if we like, as part of a wave of the far right. But people have to understand that Modi preceded Trump. And when you talk about the BJP and Hindutva and Hindu fundamentalism, that has a long history of being organized that has nothing to do with Trump, right? And so, but has more to do with, you know, long organizing of Nazis in this country, or the far right in this country, or that sort of thing, right? And so sometimes we in the US left make comparisons that keep centering the US. And it's important to do, because it's the biggest imperialist power in the world. But there's a way in which it can produce a US centrism that actually isn't helpful in understanding what are happening in other places, right? And so this is a bit of a challenge, because if you went through the US public school system as I did, we don't learn any of this stuff, right? So it's a bit of a challenge, but it's something we have to do. So I wanted to kind of say that as a preamble before introducing our speaker. We're very honored to have Rohit Prajapati speak today. He lives in India. He's visiting the US, wanted to come to this conference, and we said, please speak. And we're very happy that he's speaking. He's an activist, a researcher, and a writer. And I'll just give you a little introduction before Rohit Bhai speaks. Rohit Prajapati is an engineer by training. He's been an activist since his college days, engaging with trade union, environmental, water pollution, occupational health, organic farming, forests and indigenous people, as well as defense of civil liberties, peace and justice against the rising tide of fascism in India. His socio-environmental activism connects the local struggles constantly with the critique of the capitalist model of development, while proposing alternatives in the context of socio-political challenges peculiar to India. Rohit Bhai is a co-founder and lead member of Paryavaran Suraksha Samiti, a member of the People's Union for Civil Liberties, the PUCL, which everyone should find out more about, and has also been involved with the Narmada Bachao Andolan, the Save Narmada movement, and the People's Commission on Shrinking Democratic Spaces, PCSDS. The Narmada Bachao Andolan movement, if you're familiar with Arundhati Roy's writings, she gave a certain prominence to that movement by writing about it extensively very early on. But of course, it's much more beyond Arundhati Roy, as she herself would say. Rohit Bhai has also been a member of Radical Socialists, another group that people can look up in India, and with I've been lucky to have some interactions over the last 5 or 6 years. He's part of the anti-nuclear movement in India. In fact, he played a crucial role in a decade-long struggle of 152 villages against the Westinghouse Electric Corporation, a US corporation, and the government of India to stop a 6,000 megawatt nuclear power plant in Mitivirdi, Gujarat, with the dual strategy of active public participation of local villagers and legal intervention in the environment court. They forced an ultimate withdrawal of the project, saving fertile land and livelihoods while also killing the momentum of nuclear energy. Now they're trying to combine nearby shipbreaking yard worker struggle with the villagers' anti-nuclear struggle. Rohit Prajapati also co-authored with Dr. Tripti Shah an article in October 2013 called India, Laboratory of Fascism, Capital, Labor, and Environment in Modi's Gujarat. How is the fascism of the Sangh Parivar, the collection of organizations that makes up the Hindu right, going to be utilized for capital? 6 years today, this topic is still very much valid, but in a different scenario. So before I turn it over to Rohit, let me give you a little bit of a sense of how this is going to work, because it'll be a little different. He'll speak for about 15 to 20 minutes. Then I'll kind of do a little bit of a Q&A based on that presentation, and to try to help translate some of the details of what's going on in India to a U.S. audience. So we'll be doing some of that. And then we'll open it up for discussion. All right? So, Rohit.
I'll begin with the three slogan, which I'll tell you what it means. One is Red Salutes, Zindabad, Namaste. Let me start with the word which we use as communists. It's called false consciousness. When we find people not making their choice in terms of their day-to-day life, and they vote for far right and they vote for fascist group. And we always think in that term. So today I'm going to present, which I already delivered broadly in a longer session, that how people thought it, how people think, and how people live with those fascist forces and to be part of that. We may have theory and we may theorize those things, but how people perceive it and why people are in forefront with them. Here is the party where you will find in power, getting electoral vote, electoral mandate, and also on the ground, very powerful. These two things go together. That's quite different. And just take you back a little bit, how people perceived, in which framework people supported in last election and before that election to a BJP with huge vote and seat both, in spite of number of action which was taken when they took first power with a good mandate in 2014. They took almost many open, transparent, anti-labor, anti-people actions, and they were able to get away with that. Even if you just look at recent election, and if you just look at last 5 years, and if you just map the India in terms of various struggles on the land issue, anti-nuclear struggle, on environment, on working class issue, on issue of women's right, if you just map and plot those things on the ground in terms of number, in terms of mobilization, in terms of articulation, in terms of fight back, in terms of not just on the ground, also in various courts. If you just look at that scenario and you just look at result, it's completely contradictory, and you feel very worried with that. That when you look at them on the ground, it looks like that people are fighting the government, and they are able to articulate, they're able to come off very strongly in big number. And when the result comes, it completely say something else. And that's more worry. So in that context, I just want to throw some lights that how people lived with this and why people are thinking in this way. Because my main focus will be that how you're going to intervene in that reality. Are you going to use the old method, or you really want to relate with the people differently when you talk about electoral politics? Still, even now, after they came into power with huge mandate in terms of percentage of vote, in terms of seats, even after taking oath, again struggle has started on the ground. Same struggle on the ground in the same way. So that raised very fundamental questions, that when issue of struggle comes, people are on the ground blunt enough to fight back the fascists and the government both, But when election comes, something else happens. So I'll just put that frame, and I'll just want to elaborate on that quickly. Look at the broad history, and just to be very blunt, that this party has practically demonstrated the Leninist party concept in terms of building up the party, in terms of building up the grassroots level networks. Actually, they had practiced the Leninist theory on ground. What is to be done? Let me just say that the history, even that strategy and tactics during last almost like say 75 or 100 years, the RSS was founded, which is a main organization, Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, in 1925. They were bold enough not to engage them during those days in a freedom struggle. If you just look at that period, to keep quiet and to do your own project of Hindutva and building up the nationalism, the nation they want, they almost were ready to not to look at that at all, and bold enough to keep quiet and doing that work very systematically. That's one, you have to look at that. Second, you can see the partition happen, India-Pakistan. That was the one fertile ground they had. Then issue of Kashmir, which you may not be much aware in detail, that there is a struggle going on which asks separation of India. And also the Pakistan occupied Kashmir, and also India occupied Kashmir. It's very difficult to use these words in India. When you say India occupied Kashmir and Pakistan occupied Kashmir, people like us don't mind to use that, because we strongly feel that self-determination right, which was there even during the UN agreement, it was decided, was not followed by the Indian state. So that was one more point. The ruling party which fought, the previous ruling party, the biggest opposition now, the Congress, who fought, founded during the freedom struggle and fought the freedom struggle, and which was the party ruling, imposed emergency in 1975. That time, to counter that emergency, there was an alliance with this fascist group called RSS and Jansang. They formed one party called Jansang during those days by Jai Prakash Narayan. And the main focus was, during that time, with also by left, there was dividing left, that one party which is called CPIM, left party, supported emergency, and CPIM opposed it. And if you just look at scenario at that time, they decided to go together. I'm just making point that how people pursue your so-called tactical, strategical issue. And you can see that during that time, in 1977, the non-Congress government come in, where this Jansang was part of that government, which now later on become Bharatiya Janata Party, and now we call it a fascist. When you say fascist as communist, you just can't think in terms of that the fascism started in 80s or 90s. It was there since 1925, but to fight back and to remove the Congress in power, the party in power, alliance was made. Second step, which was there in 1989, when to keep Congress not to be in power, the person who came out of the Congress party, V.P. Singh, made an alliance on the right side, the fascists, on the left side, the mainstream left. And they run the government. You legitimize and gave a space them, and they were not compromising on their points. They were very blunt during 1975 anti-emergency struggle. They were not thinking that if we will change our stand, we'll get more support. They were very clear that our main project is to build Hindutva and Hindutva nationalism. That was it. And now just look at back after 1989. The whole issue of globalization, where the BJP came into power in one particular state called Gujarat, which is highly industrialized. And you can see the action. They were talking about Swadeshi in terms of that they were saying that we don't want foreign investment, when they were not in power. They were opposing globalization. They were opposing number of things in number of ways. And they, when they took power in particular state, they practically demonstrated completely different. In terms of investment, in terms of labor laws, in terms of environment, And the whole model of development was demonstrated by them in that particular state. And later on, they were able to manage to come in power in 2014. And theory of nation is one of the crucial things which they are playing very systematically. Very systematically. And you don't find any of the group, there's a number of group of RSS, they have a different outfit, very well planned. Somebody will talk about Ram Mandir, the temple issue, communalism, somebody will take people on the track, on the ground, and somebody will, like BJP, will electoral politics. So there were a number of people together doing all this thing. And you will find them in division of labor among them to do number. If you just look at history of this organization, you will not find one issue that's very shocking, one issue on which the people issue on which they had made struggle since 1925. Whether it's a labor issue, whether it's an environmental issue, whether it's a women issue, almost on all front, if you just look at their action, is completely reactionary for ordinary people to believe. I'm not talking about the people like us, articulate. They think that they are practically anti-people on practice. In spite of that, they have a one union called BMS, Bharatiya Mazdoor Sangh, which is number one in India, gradually become number one in India. And if you just look at their stance, and if you talk to their own worker, they always feel that on working class issue, they are not with us. Imagine in such scenario to get power, in spite of when you they came in power at the center with full majority in 2014, and if you just look at 2014 to 2019, all actions very tough in the sense, and to be very honest, the bourgeoisie was very comfortable with them after, say, I can say after 1989 onwards, that Congress was not able to do reform. These people has two things. When they are in power, they are able to do number of firm action, that is one, in favor of bourgeoisie. Second, they were very clear on the ground that if there is protest happen, it's not only government handles at the government level. They have cadre on the ground. They have cadre on the ground. They have organizers on the ground to accompany. So many times, government doesn't come directly to suppress people. They have other means to do it. And to be very honest, to take tough action for bourgeoisie, which they were looking for since many years, to take an action, this government was able to deliver. So if you look at in terms of money they mobilized during last election, it was like 50% resources was belonged to one party, huge amount, and remaining 50% was distributed among the other party. And also one more thing, just look at the left. Here is not the country where left was not in power. There are three states where mainstream left was in power. In one state like West Bengal, they were there for almost like 30 years. So if you just look at in that background, the people on the ground felt that nation first. Let's accept it, nation first. If you talk to them in terms of electoral politics, for them nation first, for them on the issue of Kashmir, the left was not very clear. The Adi parties are not clear, very defensive. They say, yeah, they are right, we should think about it, we should talk about no repression, no killing in that area, that's all. They don't want to come out very bluntly and say that we are for self-determination of Kashmiri. Mm-hmm. Whereas the RSS from 1925 onwards was not doing any compromise. If you just look at from the left perspective, they were purists in their project. To be very blunt, purists in their project. They had no plan of just 5 years, 10 years. They were looking for a bigger plan. So if you just look at 1925 during independence after partition, in 1975 during emergency, 1989, then onwards, you can see that they even came out of the government in 1989 on their points on the Ram Mandir temple. And they have only one project, the Hindutva politics, which is ongoing. agenda, and you will find them in court, on ground. That's a one major project. Kashmir belonged to us. That's a second project. Third, fight with Pakistan, and also many times China comes in. That's third. These are the only three project major. Otherwise, if you just look at their practice on ground, almost they are very capable to deliver what practically the international and national bourgeoisie want. And they are, just look at the last budget, just 3-4 days back. If you just look at the budget, they were the bold enough to take a stand on price rise. They increased the price, not just looking at the international price of the crude, they 2% SAS was imposed on petrol and diesel, which was a clear-cut rise on petrol and diesel. And when they were making point, and during last election, that all debates of Narendra Modi was not on any issue of development. Whereas 2014 was very much on that, 2019, it was not there. And if you just look at 2014 and 19, the percentage have gone up. And this is a popular mandate, it's worried. What I'm saying is a popular mandate. Now let's come to the reparation part of it. How they handle. This is not like fascism of Hitler. This is more, much more. I think the Hitler would have sat in his class to study number of things, how to do it. See, intimidation, if you just look at, he has a ready-made label. Yeah, he has a ready-made label for number of people. If you are fighting for rights of the tribal and other worker and other people on the ground and having militant activity, then you will be labeled as Naxalite. I think I'll elaborate later on if you don't know the Naxalite, what is the main one. And that's a label. If you are radical and if you are Muslim, you are terrorist. If you are not both of them, anti-development, anti-nation, and these tags are ready-made available to put on you. Mass media has been mobilized in favor of that. And they had organized number of intimidation. I'll say it's an undeclared emergency. And the Mr. Modi has learned. Modi has learned from last emergency of 1975 of Indira Gandhi, the Congress Party, that it's, if you have a declared emergency, then it's problematic too. It can be challenged in the court. You can mobilize people because it's already labeled. He's very comfortable undeclared emergency. You can see the campus. You can read our report, recent report, Sinking Democratic Space in Educational Institution. When we organized that testimony, we came out with a report of almost like we covered 19 states, and we had a number. Lots of people told us that we will give you in writing, but we don't want our name to be disclosed. We don't want that you should even, by the way, mention if we are identifiable. So intimidation tactics are, lynching is happening. There's a whole lumpen under the ground with the BJP. They terrorize people. And if you just look at today's atmosphere, the terrorists says that many TV, they don't need instruction to keep shut up. You don't practically need to announce that shut up without being people. Even I'm telling you, since last 3 days, people are sending, my own colleagues sending me, making a point that why you are inviting trouble and going and speaking to the conference. And why you chose the far right. And why you tagging your article of 2013, which is Rise of Fascism, Laboratory of Fascism. So they were making advice that please don't do it now. And this we are listening from 2013 onwards. They don't talk about all this thing. And it got completely terrorized, and they don't, there are a number of defamation case has been filed against people. There are lots of case filed against various people, branding them urban Lakshan. And also that last point, I'll just make a point before I end, that even judiciary is also terrorized. I practice environment law and labor law both together in various court. I myself can feel the drastically difference in last 4-5 years. The way judges behave, and the way judges deliver the judgments. And I'm really worried that coming days, the way they got the mandate now, yeah? To be very honest, that today the atmosphere is very, very, very in demoralized situation. for the minority, they're absolutely trying to negotiate. Some of the groups are thinking in terms of negotiating the space for the peace by joining them. By joining them. And the last, I'll just do that on the issue of caste. This is upper caste party able to manage the issue of, in spite, very casteist party in practice, in reality, they were able to completely change the table. People generally of the lower caste and SC and ST never used to vote for them, even they voted for them. They voted for them this time. And you don't find just voting them, but when you talk to them, you can find that people really want to fight for Modi. When you are in a train, when you are on a flight, I remember, I'm known by face, so whenever I travel, sometimes you have to hide your face. Because people suddenly will come to you and start arguing with you that why you are against Modi. Even today, I'm going to visit some of my friends here. I know the way they looked at me quite differently. So I want to end here. Right. Yeah. I cover intervention aspect while talking to him. Yeah. How to fight back. Yeah.
Okay. Great. So as we said at the beginning, we're doing it a little bit differently. So we heard Rohit's presentation. I think you understand in my introduction why I said we're so lucky to have him here. And now I'll ask him a few questions, a little bit in interview style. Khadija, we did this, remember, in the Kashmir talk, draw out some more things, and then we'll open it up for Q&A. All right. So thanks very much. And anything you want to add in this session, we can. But I want to ask you some particular things. So when we were talking earlier, and today you talked about how this issue of the Ram Temple that whole building around a temple in Ayodhya in northern India, which became a galvanizing force in the 80s, but it's been one of their long projects, right? Can you talk a little bit more about how they used that to mobilize people, to their cause? Because there may be many people who are religious or whatever, but not necessarily fascists, right? So what did they do to link a dominant religious ideology with their organizing? What are some of the things they did to make that an effective organizing strategy? But also, if you want, how does that link back to the freedom movement itself, and Gandhi and the kind of invocation of Ram in that context as well, leading up to the fight against the British?
I think they successfully done that Ram project, Ram Mandir project. If you just look at last 30, 40 years, very systematically, and they have a two fertile ground. Like when we say in India, Gandhi is known as the one person who is respected internationally, nationally. And if you just look at even Gandhi, he used Ram Rajya word. He has a song called Vaishnava Janto Tene Kahiye Pidvan. It's also upper caste one. He's referring to upper caste, that if you are a good upper caste person, then you should do what? And his understanding of the caste was, he used to say that Harijan, person of the God, so that's why you can't tell somebody untouchable. That fertile ground was available to them. And also, if you just look at 15th and 14th century history, the Mughal came into the that part of India, and which they looked at that, and they are able to articulate all your issue. Like unemployment, everything is because of the Hindu-Muslim issue. Mm-hmm. And they are very able to successfully argue. If you ask anybody that, but they don't have time, so now you should give them more time to talk about it. And the Hindu temple, and to be very honest, we just look at the crisis after 1989 onwards, the way alienation has happened. And I'll tell you, I can just give you example of Bharatiya Mazdoor Sangh, where...
In 1989, remember the end of the Cold War. And so that's a period of massive liberalization across the world, but particularly it's known in India as this period of, you know, just vast economic liberalization. So capital can now flow everywhere, right? So it was promised as, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
So at that period of the end of the Cold War, there's a promise, they called it the peace dividend. There'll be no more Cold War, so now there'll be plenty for everyone. But instead, it was the vast proliferation of capitalism running rampant all over the globe, right? And so in that context, India has a particular...
Yeah, and you find alienation. Actually, during those days, I read again the Marx theory of alienation. You can feel worker completely alienated because of that, and because of that particular crisis, then onwards. If you just look at how they organize working class. We organize our meeting at the gate. We mobilize workers on the street. We organize workers on the various corners to fight back with the slogans. They don't do that. I'll just tell you how they relate number of things in terms of alienation and in terms of looking at, we call it false causes, how they deal with that. And I think it's very crucial, and we were in successful in number of area because we used, not use the same technique, but that is what the way we would like to relate on various issues. You will find meeting organized in community on workers' issue. They don't want, because they want to talk to them on number of issues. They just don't want, they don't organize only on the issue of particular workers' strike. They'll also talk about what is happening in their personal life, religions, various festivals, because festivals are very crucial when you have such a crisis situation. You always get some strength from that abstract feeling that somebody is going to take care of that, and they're able to successfully theorizing that. And you find them always there in community, mm-hmm. in day-to-day life. And they take all issue in the community. You mm-hmm. don't find, they'll come on the street, on the corner. But we go from the gate to corner, to the street and strike. These people from the community on the issue, any issue comes community, then come to the street and the corner. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. if that relation has built up, and you can see that there
is so religion becomes one very, of the ways.
And also when the partition was the major issue, partition. And they use partition very systematically. Actually, they were having problem. I born and brought up in RSS family, an Indian family. I was in RSS since I was like 15. I was like a cadre, that's why I'm wearing half pant, because I told them that again I'm going to wear a half pant, because RSS used to wear a half pant, now they have a full pant. In the last 2 years, they changed the dress. So I remember that the way they used to talk, I'll just give you an example of Patel Bihari Vajpayee, how they did. I remember in one training, I've been to the fourth training camp of RSS. The fourth training camp, they say the Atal Bihari Vajpayee, which is considered as model, so-called moderate face of the BJP, and they have a number of faces. They are okay with all face. It's like a restaurant where you find all type of dishes. Veg, non-veg, everything. Latin American, African, everything. And there will be a special dish. So I remember the Vajpayee used to quote and tell us in the training that we don't want to come into power unless we have power on the ground. Yeah. Just look at that. Unless we have power on the ground, otherwise you will not be able to make changes. And if you are not able to make changes, people will throw out. Very precise. Just look at this sentence. It's very crucial. That if you are not on the ground, and if you come on the power, they said there is possibility that you come on the power, but you don't have the groundwork. He said that you should have a ground first, come on the power, then you will be able to deliver the way you want to do. Mm-hmm. You just, only government cannot implement certain tough decision. You need people support. Mm-hmm. He said popular. Mm-hmm. That's one he said. Second, he said that we don't want to recruit everybody in our organization. It's fine. Right. Only we want to do that. They should talk in our language. Mm-hmm. And you will find that left party and the other bourgeois party practically shifted on the right. Mm-hmm. Even left on Kashmir, they are quite okay. In recent election, the secularism was missing. People were not using at all. Mm-hmm. That means instead of they lift, they push this right to left. So religion was and a partition. Mm-hmm. Partition is like Hindu Muslim, even cricket match. Yeah. Everything is so, and the Hindu temple become big issue. I'll tell you, even our left union people say that we don't want to discuss Ram temple Hindu Muslim. We are with them on this nation first,
wow.
Kashmir and Hindu Muslim, and and that Ram temple is working. I think it will be long run. Mm-hmm. Now, if we will make a breakthrough, because now they have a majority, If they don't do me on a point, then we can use that to explain that these people are trying to divide you by using temple, but that you have to do very systematically. So in that sense, I'll say that in terms of intervention, also very crucial. That they're able to, I heard people saying that on land right, I'm with you, but on election, I want Modi. Nation first. The word is called nation first.
Thanks. So just to throw out a few things so people understand exactly the context, right? So the RSS is the cadre organization out of which the Hindu rights various organizations emerge. The BJP currently in power is the political arm of that organization. So what Rohit was describing was growing up in an RSS family. And actually, until the age of 15, I'm sure you understood, but I want to underline what we're actually hearing, okay? And make sure, you know, so sorry if I sound like I'm simplifying, that he grew up in an RSS family. I have upper caste relatives who also are pro-RSS and, you know, et cetera, right? They grew up in that family. It goes under the name of Hindu culture. It goes under the name of strength. Right? And those sorts of things. We need a strong India. We need to build ourselves. They do physical exercises and training and things like that, right? It's out of that. And so there, what Rohit was describing, hearing Atal Bihari Vajpayee, who later became Prime Minister of India, saying at that time, if we take political power, that's nothing if we don't have power on the ground. So this is... So Trump right now, is it okay if I... So Trump right now is giving an open door to the fascists, right? So now we're seeing Nazis on the street in the way we never saw them before. Imagine if Trump himself was going to those training camps back in the day when he was far from power and telling people these things. And that's why Rohit is saying Hitler would have gone to the RSS school. Meaning, they are so systematically building for this since 1925, and in fact, avoiding the popular struggles in order to hammer down building this self-conscious cadre and all of that, right? So I wanted to kind of, you know, make that point, right? And then, so the religion stuff comes in with the alienation after 1989. Let me ask you a question. You do a lot of work around environmental. Oh, how much time do we have for this section?
You got 5 minutes.
Okay, so I'll switch to something else. You do a lot of... So what you described is in the mass mobilization you do, one of the things that it does is it breaks that consciousness, right? Where people are seem to be in struggle in the day-to-day, but at election time, they'll vote for BJP, right? So I wanted to ask you kind of a two-part question. The general one is... Well, I'll be very specific. In the environmentalist activism that you do, can you just talk about that activism a little bit and then how it connects to this issue of the far right?
I'll just take even that liberty that when we work on various issues, to be very honest, we are very clear from the day one that we will not talk about the only issue-based struggle at all, whether it's environment, whether it's worker. I'll just give you one quick example that when we had one big struggle in one company made in lockout. It's a 100-year-old company in India in Gujarat, well-known, Koljoti Limited. We organized number of meeting, not just on the street, on a corner, but we also organized at a community base. We made a point to the people that we need meeting of your relatives, your friends, to discuss your issue. So that they understand that why we need wage rise. We practically did. When we went to the negotiation on table with the government, we form a committee in which the family member who are not part of, who are not a worker, were part of the committee. In advisory form, sitting outside. Even the friends who supported the movement, we also included them. And we had seen that how that process helped in terms of consciousness. That's a very crucial thing if we don't do it. And we always said, no, later on. During freedom struggle, the left thought that it's time to just kick out the British, fine. During emergency, left thought that let's kick out Congress. And now people think that let's kick out Narendra Modi. And we also fought one struggle in terms of electoral, which is called We have a one provision during election where you can vote none of the above. If you don't like any candidate, there is a button which you can push. People like us fought for it. Because we don't want that, it's like that between them. Otherwise, you are not going to build up your own project at all, social project. Because it always lesser evilism. You can say in lesser evilism to counter Congress, the ruling party, you provided a space to BJP to grow. So the smaller evil become the bigger evil, and you do that. So the, in last election, we got almost like more than 1% vote as a nota vote. And this is a huge number. Like in Gujarat, where the it's a laboratory of fascism, laboratory of the BJP, the demonstration, where we got 4 lakh people.
Four lakh means four?
400,000.
Mm.
Not 400,000.
No.
1 lakh is 10,000. 1 million is 10 lakh.
4 million.
4 million. 4 million. Yeah. Imagine. And that number, if you just can plot on the map where the struggles were on. And if that space was not available to them, I don't think that. So now let's come to the environment. Why that happened? See, I'll give you 2 examples where we are involved. Like one is Meethi Vedi, where we talked about the anti-nuclear struggle, where American government decided to have nuclear power plant in 2007. And we engaged people. There is a one ship breaking yard next to that, where you find migrant workers there in huge number, like 40,000. Even the villagers also part of that. When we started working in that area on environmental issue, we do use activism in the court also, because you can't engage court unless, because they don't, the judges doesn't come, they have no space to come in public meeting. They don't come to your seminar. So we always use sometimes judicial activism to go and address them, all philosophical aspect and all number of things even beyond the law, and we argue the matter. So on Meethi Vedi nuclear power issue, from the day one, we made a point that we will not be hurriedly imposing agenda, like issue of gender, because there was upper caste people in that area, issue of Hindu-Muslim also was there, there was also rich farmer, small farmer was there. So we processed that from the day one. And a lot of people used to ask us during the day, you focus on environment, you focus on anti-nuclear. We said that, sorry. And in the beginning, it was the slogan, if you just look at the process, you can find number of article on that. You can see the slogan we started by saying that not in my backyard was the beginning, mm-hmm. not in my country second, nowhere in the world. And we never made that point from the beginning. You can yourself can see the various articulation, TV interviews by the same people, grassroots level villager to do that. And second, I'll show you that when you do the process, women, the upper caste women had no chance to come out on the street because they're not allowed to work outside their home. When they go out, they wear that. Those women, when we won the battle, you can see the reaction of those women looking at us and say, yeah, we won. It's look that why they're upset, because they thought that now we will not be on the street, we will not be allowed to. But because of the point which we had an alliance with the feminist group on that, they told us that no, our battle is not over, we'll continue on other aspect which they used to do from the day one. So if you combine that, and also industrial pollution thing, on the working class and the pollution, many times you can find that workers against community on environment issue. When you close down factory, we have 2 examples which people can read. One is Hema Chemical Industry, where workers fought, raised first that issue of pollution of hazardous dumping outside, then about their health. And in spite of that, struggle continued, and they were able to combine both. Second is Sardar Sarovar Dam, where you will be surprised to know that we had a union there on the dam site, and the people who fought, like us also, I'm part of both union and Narmada Bachchandra, where those who are opposing dam, sharing the same office, same postal address, same one number, marching together. Imagine, the workers go on strike where tribal support, and because of the subversion issue, and you can see that marching together. And in that sense, on environmental aspect, to be very honest, when I go to the environmental group, I'm branded as trade unionist. When I go to trade unionist meeting in the mainstream lab, they call it me, I'm an environmentalist. So that's the scenario.
Thanks very much. So yeah, I think that